You're with SBS Radio.
Professor Tillman, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
You're part of ICANN, the international campaign against...
It's the international campaign to abolish nuclear weapons. We established that in Melbourne 2005. It was sort of launched internationally in 2007, and it's become really the major global civil society campaign coalition working with governments that achieved the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons last year, for which it was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize last year.
That's what I was going to come to, because you were awarded that prize, although the Australian government didn't take part into the treaty on the ban of nuclear weapons.
We were, of course, a bit disappointed with that. It's the first time that an organisation born in Australia had been awarded this, you know, very significant international recognition. And so it was disappointing, but I think it, you know, it reflects the fact that, unfortunately, Australia doesn't support the treaty at the moment because we have this conflicted position that while we claim to support nuclear disarmament, at the same time we also claim that US nuclear weapons are essential for Australia's security. So it puts us in a difficult position. It's hard to be consistent or sincere about our claim support for nuclear disarmament while we at the same time claim protection from those very weapons. So I think I take some heart from the fact that obviously the work that ICANN's doing matters and affects the government, but it is disappointing, particularly in the light of all of the other prohibition treaties for indiscriminate, inhumane weapons which commendably Australia has signed, and for some that we actually were significant leaders in, for example, the Chemical Weapons Convention that outlaws the use of chemical weapons.
And your organisation is at the forefront once again in the sidelines of the historic summit yesterday between President Donald Trump and the North Korean leader, President Kim Jong-un.
This is clearly a really historic development. That word's been used a lot in the last 24 hours, but it really is at this very significant potential flashpoint for conflict, this unresolved war that really hasn't finished since the 1950s. There hasn't been a peace agreement. There's only been an armistice that halted hostilities. It's really the most militarized border in the world between North and South Korea, with all of the very scary aggressive threats that we've heard in the last year on both sides. The fact that they're now sitting down and talking and making some, you know, very hopeful progress was a very historic development that we felt that the campaign really should have a presence at. So the chair of the International Steering Group, my colleague Akira Kawasaki from Japan, and Beatrice Finn, who's the ICANN Executive Director based in Geneva, were in Singapore for the summit, really to present, a very cogent proposal from civil society as to the best way to really cement progress and make it durable and last beyond, you know, the whims and terms in office of the current leaders, and particularly to flag the significant possible role for this treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons, which at present is really the only international legal architecture that really does provide a pathway towards irreversible, verified, comprehensive a denuclearization of nuclear armed states, which is exactly the stated purpose of this this process.
Yeah, and we can see I've got the text of the declaration in front of me. It says denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. And yet a lot of the pundits, including in the scientific community, are disparaging this declaration, saying there should be a unilateral and unconditional denuclearization of North Korea before even any talks can go ahead. And they say this is a capitulation of the US agreeing to denuclearizing the peninsula as a whole.
Yes, that's certainly what many people are saying. I think that's a really unhelpful position to take for a couple of reasons. Firstly, in a negotiation, you know, there obviously has to be give and take. The expectation that seems to underlie that approach is that what we need is total, unconditional capitulation by North Korea to renounce, you know, what it is at great pain and cost built over decades, essentially the arsenal that provides effectively an insurance policy for the regime with no concessions on the other side. I mean, that's not a negotiation. That's not a realistic approach to really achieve anything. And the other fundamental problem, I think, with that approach is that it really ignores, you know, the elephant in the room, that nuclear weapons are an existential threat to all of us. Wherever we live, they threaten all of us every day with their possible use while they exist, because their effects would not be contained in space and time, would not be confined to the area where they might be used, but would spread around the globe in terms of climate impacts and radiation, etc. So I think the fact that this statement refers to denuclearization is significant, because you know, this situation of sort of nuclear apartheid, if you like, that the South African diplomats often refer to, where, you know, somehow these suicide bombs, these really global suicide bombs, are seen as legitimate or justified as legitimate instruments of state policy for some states, but are totally beyond the pale, totally unacceptable, you know, warrant even wars of intervention for other states, is a completely unsustainable position, and it drives proliferation. While any country has nuclear weapons, other states will acquire them. And I think one of the key lessons from North Korea is that even a very isolated, impoverished, you know, technically backward country can develop nuclear weapons if it's determined to do so. So we can't control these weapons by controlling access to the technology to produce them. The cat's really out of that bag. So this approach to broaden the scope to the regional implications, the wider implications, I think is much more feasible and much more significant, because while there are not US nuclear weapons stationed in South Korea, it's clear that the alliance relationship that South Korea has with the United States, similar to Australia's, involves two things. One is a claim that South Korea may wish US nuclear weapons to be used on its behalf in some circumstances, and that the US is willing to do that. And secondly, South Korea, like Australia, provides assistance for the possible military use of US nuclear weapons. So a full denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula would involve not just the dismantling of North Korea's weapons and its weapons program and the facilities that can produce those weapons, but also no stationing of weapons in South Korea and no active assistance for use of possible nuclear weapons in Korea by South Korea. And of course, that doesn't solve the wider issue of, you know, nuclear weapons are a global threat, and essentially everywhere is at risk from them, and the US has, you know, very long-range missiles, as do China and Russia, also neighbouring North Korea. So I think this also points to the potential utility of the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons as a useful tool here. One could imagine, for example, and the approach that ICAN is suggesting, is that the tool provides perhaps the most effective available mechanism to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula and move towards the global nuclear disarmament that all governments are legally committed to. If North Korea and South Korea, for example, both signed the treaty, and North Korea would then, in a verified process, internationally supervised, need to demolish its nuclear arsenal and nuclear program, South Korea would need to withdraw from the nuclear parts of its alliance with the United States. It wouldn't need to renounce the whole military alliance, but it would need to remove possible nuclear weapons use from that alliance. If North Korea and South Korea, for example, both signed the treaty, and North Korea would then, in a verified process, internationally supervised, need to demolish its nuclear arsenal and nuclear program, South Korea would need to withdraw from the nuclear parts of its alliance with the United States. It wouldn't need to renounce the whole military alliance, but it would need to remove possible nuclear weapons use from that alliance. Then I think that's a much more productive approach and durable and sustainable way to build peace and reduce the nuclear dangers on the Korean Peninsula.
These talks that have just started, lauded by some part of the international community, including ICAN, as a positive step, one would shed some skepticism on their positive conclusion in a few weeks or months or even years to come, in light of the Iran nuclear deal which was signed and then renounced by one of the parties.
Of course, and I had been very concerned about that development, as I think really universally around the world, you know, there's hardly a government, really just the United States and Israel are really the only two governments that have supported abrogating that hard-won international agreement that was really quite historic and provided a very good model for many of the aspects that will be required to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. Under that agreement, Iran accepted really the most intrusive verification regime with permanent resident inspectors from the International Atomic Energy Agency in Iran at all times, a wide range of remote and video and sensing capabilities, and much greater restrictions on its nuclear activities than any country has ever previously accepted. The International Atomic Energy Agency had repeatedly confirmed that Iran was fulfilling its side of the agreement. So to walk away from such an agreement raises very serious questions about the durability of you know, U.S. government commitment. I was very worried that it would bode ill for this summit that was held just now in Singapore, and weaken the likelihood of an agreement and of any agreement sticking. And I think that's why it's crucially important that as quickly as possible other countries in the region, the United Nations, the International Atomic Energy Agency that can provide verification expertise, that we embed this very hopeful but very early progress into international law and treaties that will be bedded down and much harder to abrogate than either individual commitments of leaders and decisions, you know, that can change overnight, or bilateral agreements that are subject to the kind of disruption that we've seen with the US walking away from the Iran agreement.
Enjoy more stories in your language by visiting sbs.com.au.